Okay.
So scared. All right. No.
You're scared?
I'm no.
For kidding. The Negative World Podcast, the most friendly podcast in the world.
Hello, and welcome to the Negative World Podcast, a podcast about video games by the Nintendo fans at NegativeWorld.org. We are recording this on Friday, December 2nd, 2011, less than 40 hours before Mario Kart 7 drops in America. I'm your host, Stephen, or as I'm known on the boards, Dr. Finkelstein. And with me today, I have...
Boot, but my name is actually Paul, and I'm going to talk about Xenoblade. That's a game that was just... announced for North America, which is just amazing. It's a game that I've had for a while. I imported it, and I'm really happy to talk about it. And also with us is...
This is Poke Squadron. Call me Jamie. Want to talk a little bit about just superhero games. There have been a lot of superhero games within the past couple years coming out. And just kind of looking at them, where they've come from and where they are now thanks to technology, and you know what we can look forward to on Wii U and 3DS.
All right, sounds good. And as for myself, I'm going to talk about Game Boy Advance games, kind of a wishful thinking thing now that the Ambassador games are, I guess, a few weeks away. They promised them this year still, so we're going to be getting a few games pretty soon as Ambassador guys. And I hope that means we got more Game Boy Advance games on the way, and so that's what we're going to talk about. But enough with the chit-chat, let's get to the chit-chat. So it's no surprise that the three of us have all been playing the hell out of The Legend of Zelda Skyward Sword. But even though that's been all I've been playing, and we'll get to that in a minute, I know that you guys have been playing some other stuff. So what have you guys been playing? Plut, what about you? Anything else?
What have I been playing? Well, I definitely played Zelda, and I was blown away once those ending credits ended. And you do want to watch it through to the ending credits. That's not a spoiler. You want to enjoy the credits. That's all I'm going to say. After that, I needed something else to play. I was playing Oblivion before it, and I thought I was going to go back to it. But as a PC gamer, yes, I'm a kind of PC / Wii gamer. As a PC gamer, finally Batman came out not too long ago. So I jumped right into Batman Arkham City, which I'm sure we'll talk about later.
All right, well then, so Jamie, that's been the two you've been playing is Batman and Zelda?
Yeah, I mean, I pretty much went on a Zelda bender for about a week.
We all did.
And no, it really, you know, demanded like all of my attention. You know, it's been like five years since the last Zelda came out, so I had to give it its due there. But yeah, so and that actually worked out well because Batman came out on PC like 2 days after Zelda came out, and then a couple days later was like the Black Friday weekend sale. So I got Batman for like $25, which worked out well. And, but yeah, Batman, I mean, I'll get into it more in a bit, but I put a few hours into it, and it's awesome. Like, if you liked Arkham Asylum at all, if you remotely like Batman, like, you need to play it, because it's fulfilling childhood dreams, basically, is what that game does. It's like, you really do feel like Batman. Like, anything you've pretty much ever seen Batman do in the comics, or whatever, like the cartoons and the movies, it's like, he does in that game, and you get to do it, and it's really interactive, and just, you know, I think it's actually a game I think a lot of Nintendo fans would really like, because it's the gameplay is just solid, and you know, I'm gonna get into a little bit more going on, but I've been playing that, and as you know, Steven, I recently got a 3DS, been playing that a little bit. Played through Super Mario 3D Land for the most part.
Yeah, it was kind of a devil on your shoulder, whispering you to go get it. Go get the 3DS.
Oh,
just do it. You were on the fence a little bit because it's like a lot to lay down. And I'm glad that I kind of pushed you over the edge.
No, I'm glad you pushed me too because, you know, it's awesome. It's, you know, you see the commercials and you hear people talking about it. It's Mario. Well, you know, who am I kidding? I'm a sucker.
As we were talking about before in the pre-show conversation is that, you know, certain games you really want to be there when they release because there's a whole community aspect or there, especially for online games. Even though Mario is not an online game, but we're all part of Negative World. And you want to be there for it. And that was, I think, part of the reason you were feeling like, you know, maybe I should get this right now. And
yeah.
So you've been able to partake in the discussion thread and share secrets or tips or that kind of thing.
Definitely. Definitely. Yeah. Like anything, any kind of game that like I care a lot about, I'll get it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I'm buying all these games that are on Steam that I missed out on like 5 years ago. But that works out too. So
better late than never.
Hey. It works out pretty well.
But okay, so we'll talk about Batman in your main segment because that kind of ties into that. So let's jump in then to a little bit of Zelda discussion since we all have been playing the hell out of that game. Because all three of us have completed it. I beat it today. Jamie, you were a few days ago. Paul, when did you beat that game?
It was definitely a few days ago. Okay, yeah, so for sure.
What was your clock on that? Because I was...
We don't need to talk about that.
Well, I mean...
You don't like to talk about that. Yeah, I think you're the first one who needs to say what their clock was then.
No, it was like 53 hours.
So yeah, for me, it was just under 58 hours even, which I guess I was the longest here.
Yeah, I was 53-ish.
Three. And I was between 46, 47, but I didn't actually get all of the pieces apart. I was missing two pieces. yes. I was missing, like, not two pieces. I was missing two full hearts in my life age.
I was missing two exact pieces of heart, and I was like, screw it. And I just went ahead and
did it. That was basically what I did, yeah.
To go on with my life.
I was missing two, you know, full heart pieces, but I think I had three pieces of heart to get that, like, second last one.
Mm-hmm.
So I was missing, I guess, five or six pieces of heart by the end. And I know that, Steven, that you probably got all of them, right?
Well, I was missing two as well. And I did end up using, like, I just Googled to cross-check. So I was writing down where I found all of mine, and that way I could just easily figure it out. And maybe that's cheating or whatever, but you know what? I'm not going to spend another 20 hours. And actually,
I mean, when it comes to pieces of heart, whatever.
Well, the annoying thing...
That's the Zelda way, is to write things down. That's old school.
The annoying thing, though... Well, no, but then I cross-checked it with the internet, is what I'm saying. But the annoying thing was that both pieces of heart were in places that I had already noticed something about, but I just forgot. So, like, maybe this is a spoiler for people, but, you know, the Goron that has you draw something on the wall. He asked me to draw arrows, and I drew rupees because I felt like it. And if I drew an arrow, he would have gave me a piece of heart. So, like, I was already there.
Hey, that's one that I need still.
Yeah, me too.
simple as that. I couldn't believe that you don't have to draw multiple things. It's just that single arrow. You just draw a freaking arrow.
And well, then, that's a thing that a lot of people, they will probably go through the entire game and not even realize they can do.
Right. Oh, well, actually, I found it by accident on the ship, the sand ship. On the back wall, I played the harp, and then I saw this weird image on the thing, but I had never talked to that Goron before, so I didn't know what the hell that was about until I talked to Jamie, like, the next day. And
the first time I made that symbol appear, I rolled into it, I slashed at it, yeah. I yelled at it, like, so I actually yelled at it, what is your point? But eventually I figured out.
Yeah.
Yeah, I drew rupees, like, every time.
Me too.
Pretty much.
And then the second heart piece that I missed was actually the last goddess cube, which was in the volcano area near the very top, like, near that temple and everything. And I noticed something fishy about this whole area. Like, I saw vines that I couldn't get to and everything, that kind of thing. Mm. But I just forgot to do that. So so I don't hate myself too much because I would have found them eventually. But I just didn't want to spend 10 hours.
Yeah, something you, like, eventually you got the item that you could use to get to that point.
And then with that, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, I mean, after I was kind of, you know, getting done with the game, I was going through the, you know, you go to the Sheikah Gossip Stone, and it gives you hints and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And that thing that you were just talking about was, like, one of the little videos that they show you.
Okay.
And I don't know why they're really selective about hints that they show you, but, you know, they just lead to, like, little secrets you can find, and, like, drawing on the wall is one of the videos, too, so I found that after I got that particular piece of heart, so I was like, oh.
And then you both found all the gratitude crystals, right?
Yes.
Yes, oh, that was the most important thing to me before beating it.
I was missing 5, and I was still missing that slot on my inventory.
Right. And yeah, that was, like, the last one I got.
And again, even though I looked it up to see what I was missing, I would have figured that out eventually, because I had seen... Actually, Jamie and I had talked about this, too, about... It was Beetle and his whole, like, missing bug thing. And Jamie told me about that. He, like, accidentally told me about Bug Island right away, and before I knew about it. And so I was like, okay, whatever. And then I found Bug Island, and I did the little minigame, and I got, like... I got a bug of some kind, but just anyone that you would use in a potion. And I went to check on Beetle, and Beetle had his bug. So I was like, what the hell is Jamie talking about? Whatever. But after I got to that point of no return, right before the end of the game, that's when Beetle was ready to have that quest happen. So I kind of skipped over, because when I checked on him last, he was fine. But then he wasn't. So I would have found that eventually, too, just talking to him. But why spend another 5-10 hours talking to every NPC?
Running around. Yeah, for sure.
I kind of like that, you know, people have different things going on with them at different points of the game, but at the same time, it's like, to do the side quests, you basically have to run around town and see who's ready for a side quest, like, between dungeons, kind of. So it's like, all right, who's got a little cloud bubble above their head and is ready to go here?
Right.
Well, my thing, like, I got lucky, and once I discovered the Bug Island thing, I was like, oh, okay, maybe, because I kind of had an idea of how the game ran. Mm-hmm. It's like, maybe if I go and I fall asleep on Beetle's airship, maybe something will happen. So I kind of actually got lucky there.
Well, I did that when I saw, I flew there in the day, and then I saw that there was an area with the unopened chest. And I put together really quickly that, okay, you can only get there with another platform. He's got that random extra part to his shop.
Right.
So it's not just for me to dive off of and faceplant, you know, in town. But so I did put two and two together with that. But like I said, when I went to talk to him every single time until I was at the very end of the game, he did not have a problem. He just kept showing me, oh, look at my bug. Okay.
That's great, nice. Man. Good for you.
Yeah. And he drops you through that hole.
Yeah. Although to beat that, you just got to sleep in his bed.
Yeah, that's true.
But yeah, which takes too long to actually avoid the annoyance of falling through that hole. But I would go in there to check to see if there's anything new on occasion. And I would just, the second I entered, I would just hit first person view and scan. That way he couldn't screw me over, you know?
Yeah.
There was no way I ran up to him. But
he's too busy riding that bike, man. He's pedaling.
I thought that was really
he's
creative.
Pedaling while he's pedaling. Is that the joke?
Maybe. Well, because... In Spirit Tracks, and maybe, or no, I don't think it's in Phantom Hourglass, but in Spirit Tracks, he's got his own kind of balloon. So I think that him being like a sky salesman is kind of a thing right now. I don't know if either of you have played Spirit Tracks or not, but...
Did not.
I did, and I wasn't 100% a huge fan. I really liked the dungeons, and I really liked the boss battles, but the overworld was not so great.
I enjoyed it, but I mean, I recently actually played through it because I stopped 2 years ago at the final boss, at like the third form of the final boss, because I couldn't spin on my stylus correctly. So I just got frustrated and then forgot about it. But I did go at like the day after I got Skyward Sword, I went back and I beat Spirit Tracks really quick. And so I did a little train driving and everything, and I enjoyed it, but it's kind of cool to shoot the rocks or catch the bunnies. I mean, but it's, you know, I do miss handheld Zeldas that are more like Link's Awakening
Zelda?
Or the Oracle series. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So in general, I mean, just getting back to more generally, I guess, what we thought about Skyward Sword. Like, what do you guys think was, you know, pros and cons or your favorite parts of the game, or where does it fall for you? Amongst, you know, the entire
the Zelda
series.
Spectrum.
Yeah.
The Tingle Rainbow of Zelda games.
Yes. I can answer that.
Yeah, you go first.
Okay. I feel that the combat was by far the best. I don't think there's much denying that. Beating the final boss was very, very... It felt great. I feel that the music was great. The story was great. The exploration was not so great. So overall, it is one of my favorites. I like the areas. We do return to them a few times, but I feel that it was definitely in my top Zelda games. I don't know where it fits in my top Zelda games, but I mean, even just the combat alone makes it very, very good.
I'd have to definitely agree with most of your assessment. The combat, for sure. I mean, that was the smile on my face on launch day was from the combat alone. I mean, it took me a second to get used to some of the free falling things, you know, Wii Sports Resort kind of intricacies of the game. But the combat did feel great, and I know that it's not perfect. You know, like sometimes I want to slash downward, but it's thinking that I'm slashing from above. When I move my hand down to like during the imprisoned battle, it's constantly moving my arm in a circle, but it keeps registering a downstroke instead of an upstroke. But I think that they can only go up from there. I think they just not got to continue to refine it. I also thought that the story was really great, which I think is kind of something that's tearing people apart on the boards right now. There's a lot of like, I love the story, and then other people think it's boring. But I personally, I'm a bit of a hopeless romantic kind of guy, and I liked seeing that little interplay between Link and Zelda. It was very, very cute, in my opinion.
I agree.
That was really nice.
I wish they played it up a little bit more. I mean, not like I need some sort of romantic kiss at the end or something like that, you know? Which I guess, spoiler alert, that doesn't happen. But the story is so built up in the beginning, and everyone complains about how it's long-winded and everything, but the story then kind of quickly wraps up at the end. After you do everything, I guess I wouldn't have minded. After I beat the game, I can sit back for a minute and watch a little more exposition going on. But the end credits, as you were saying, it's important to watch those because they do tell a certain part of the story that you don't see during the normal game. And it's very cool and gratifying to see that. And then I think they ended it pretty well. So I think overall the story was pretty fun.
I think they were alluding at something without giving something away. They were alluding at something at the end. And that was pretty cool.
You think maybe they're alluding to a possible next storyline kind of thing?
Well, a next storyline, but they're alluding to, you know, maybe the sky has nothing to do with our future kind of thing without giving anything away.
Well, okay, I mean, if you know anything about, like, event, like the news leading up to before this game coming out, you kind of have an idea as to, you know, where this game falls, you know, in the entire, like, you know, Zelda timeline or whatever.
I'm pretty sure that's basically like that's a known, right? That's
right. I mean, we're not spoiling anything there. So,
well, if you haven't played the Zelda game yet, you shouldn't be listening to the podcast right now. Wait till, you know, skip ahead by another 15-20 minutes maybe. But for anyone who has been playing and has gotten in, you know, past first redundancy, then you know, spoiler alert, watch out, but you are building the Master Sword, and that is kind of the beginning of the timeline.
Right,
which is pretty awesome.
Yeah,
I mean, like when I had to go back and do the three things to get the, you know, to power up the sword, I noticed the sword was changing its shape slightly,
and
I was talking to my wife, and I was like, and she doesn't even know what I'm talking about half the time. She beat Ocarina of Time, but I said, I think Link is building the Master Sword, and if that happens, I'm going to be very, very happy. And then, of course, you know.
I mean, there's definitely, in that regard, you know, that's a lot of fan service right there. Because, I mean, to any Zelda fan, like, the Master Sword, that's, like, that's the weapon. That's, like, the greatest thing ever. It's like, oh, man, well, it's the Master Sword.
If you think of its use in the storylines, it's arguably the next best thing to the Triforce as far as keeping out evil, doing this and that. It's an important little trinket, you know.
Yeah.
It's definitely up there with my list of favorite fictional weapons, I guess. You know, that's up there with like the proton pack for me, right there.
That's pretty good.
It's
the proton pack and the trap
and the lightsaber and Excalibur, which is basically what the Master Sword is. But
to tell you the truth, when the Master Sword was completed, because we're talking about that now, I did wish that there was a little bit more of a an oomph to it.
I could see that. A little more of a fanfare, I guess.
Yeah.
I suppose I could agree with that.
In line with what they've done in older games, though. So, I don't know.
One thing I want to mention is the music in this game. I thought it was really well done.
I agree.
I kind of wish there was a little bit more to it. Like more tracks or something. More to kind of savor on and chew on. But I think that you guys know that the ballad of the goddess is the
Zelda's Lullaby.
Backwards, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, and that's the thing. It's amazing that that song can sound so good considering what it is.
Yeah, that's pretty genius. Even though it has nothing to do with like the story, really. I mean, it's not like we're rewinding time. I mean, I guess you know what I mean, though.
I think it was just a throwback play on things.
It's not like there's a moment in the story where Zelda goes, "Oh my gosh, this song is great. I'm gonna play it backwards, and that'll be my new song." You know, it's just kind of a thing for the fans to be aware of.
I thought it was pretty neat, though.
Well, like there's things in the game that don't even necessarily make sense, but you know, are there again for fan service. Like that's probably a fan service thing. The Tingle doll in Zelda's room. It makes no sense to have Tingle there because in the timeline,
I know, that's true.
He's way in the future, you know. But it's just there to just
Tingle
make people
is eternal,
happy.
By the way. I hope we're all
well,
aware
wouldn't
that
be great if like there was one more game before this one in the timeline and it was actually Tingle's birth and like him and the whole thing?
That'd be horrible.
The game to go back in time like, what and stop Tingle from being born? Is that...
Well, what if he's actually like the true goddess? You know, I mean, the fairies in Ocarina of Time are kind of, besides the big boobs, are kind of, you know, could be either way. Like if you took away the boobs, they look kind of mannish. Like maybe Tingle's got some goddess under those,
some blood in there,
green under those green.
He looks
cloths.
Like Miyamoto though, so
that's interesting too. I never thought about that.
Do you remember
how he used to look in the very beginning? Because he had a slightly different look.
He was pretty ugly.
In Majora's Mask.
Yeah. He looked even weirder, I think, in the beginning.
Oh, he had like a human face.
Yeah.
That's right. He had that more realistic look to him, and it was kind of horrific.
Which was the beauty of that game, but...
regarding the music, I mean, I think the last... You know, I love the soundtrack to Wind Waker. I know Steven, you're a huge fan of that game's music.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And I love the soundtrack to Twilight Princess. You know, both of those games have really good music. But I think I can probably say that for me, I think both of them probably had a little too much of a reliance on remixing older songs from older games and just trying to, you know, if you're in Zora's Domain, we're going to play the Zora's Domain song, or you're in Forbidden Forest, we got to remix Kokiri Forest a little bit. But I think this game did a better job with having original tracks that they might not be as memorable, but, you know,
Outset Island in Wind Waker is Kokiri Forest, partially.
Yeah.
Right. I mean,
which is really, really cool, but it's good for a game to kind of have its own identity.
Right. Like when I hear this, the music from this game, I think of Skyward Sword. I don't think, like when you hear the theme, that's basically, you know, Link and Zelda flying around. It's like, that's not remixed from anything. That's their theme for that moment. And I thought that this game did a good job pretty much throughout the entire game of doing that and you know, remixing certain songs when it was appropriate.
I see both sides of that coin, because on the one hand, Nintendo tends to do that a lot lately with the Mario games. Even they haven't been creating a lot of original tracks, or am I just generalizing because of Mario 3D Land? But on the one hand,
I think that's true, because they did that a lot in Galaxy,
right?
Too.
They're banking on the nostalgia a lot, but at the same time, with Zelda, anyway, I do like the continuity that kind of happens with...
It works. It worked thematically well in, like, the stories that they were telling, because, you know, Wind Waker was, you know, they're reminding you of old things because it's really... You know, this story lends itself well to that. And Twilight Princess, you're literally, like, running around the same areas. So, you know, in Death Mountain, we gotta play, you know, slightly weird, different version of the Goron song. So, you know, it works story-wise, but it was just nice to see them make a soundtrack that stands on its own a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's the thing. Like, I mean, they didn't rely so much on, well, here we go again. This is the game that will always, everything gets anchored to, Ocarina of Time.
Right.
We had the Temple of Time in this game and Twilight Princess. Both of them are different temples, but they're connected to the same kind of mythos, right?
Right.
But what was nice about this game was we didn't have, you know, a Goron city. We didn't have Zora's Domain. We had kind of different kind of, we had those diggy guys.
Magmas.
Magmas. And we had those seahorse things, which it was kind of nice to tell you the truth.
They did, I think, but I don't remember what it is.
Yeah, but they said magma a million times in the game, and these ones, I don't magma know.
Magma. It's a pretty memorable name, though. I like that. The magma.
Magma. Which was kind of nice to tell you the truth. I mean, they're different, and it's nice to see something different in like a main Zelda game. I mean, we don't need to rely on these things all the time. The Gorons were created for Ocarina of Time. The Zoras, as we know them, were created for Ocarina of Time. I mean, right. I know we had Zoras in the original Zelda, but those were completely different things.
And I think that is kind of nice that to show off the fact that the Zelda story takes place over tons and tons of lifetimes, because you have literal evolutions of things. Like those little squid creatures could be the evolution of Zoras eventually. Just like
that's
we have
right.
The bird creatures from Wind Waker. The
being
birds,
Zoras.
Yeah, they were the future Zoras when more water came to Hyrule, you know, with
they became birds for some reason. Right. Very weird.
But then
I
again,
agree.
maybe under the surface everything kinda died. You know, I mean, except for monsters or something. So who knows? Maybe they decided to take to the skies. But it is kind of cool. So maybe the magmas are pre-Goron. You know, who knows? I mean, I don't know if they're going to explore that.
Well,
ever.
I mean, the thing is, we did have Gorons in the game, right?
Oh, that's right. We did.
We had two. I think there were just two, right? There was the guy with the awesome hair and the guy without the awesome hair. The guy with the backpack.
It makes you wonder where the hell they came from.
Yeah, because it's the only two that we see. Like, where the hell are they? We only go back to the same three places over and over and over again. And I'm not complaining about it, although there's a couple times where I did complain about it to myself. Where did these Gorons come from? Mm-hmm. Who are these people?
Yeah, you know, I think I thought about that during the game, but then forgot about it. But you're right, that is kind of a mystery.
I mean, the first time in this game that I saw the Triforce, or that I noticing the Triforce, was at the Temple of Time. You know, the big Temple of Time monument, basically. Yeah. You had the Triforce up above the bird symbol. That was neat, mm-hmm. because there was no talk about the Triforce in the game until way later in the game.
Right.
I thought it was pretty cool. Although they talk about the gods of old, which is kind of weird, because in later Zelda games, they talk about these gods of old as if they were the only gods.
Yeah, now it sounds more like they were... Maybe I'm misunderstanding this, but it sounds like almost there was one goddess that broke into three, or like the three goddesses that we know of in Ocarina of Time came after this main goddess who separated Skyloft from the Earth.
Yeah, I kind of look at that stuff just even if it's you know the people interpreting it in different ways throughout the years or.
Well, yeah, that happens as storytelling through generations goes.
Right.
And that's the thing. The thing that I really applaud this game for was mentioning that. Because Fi, or Fi, how do we pronounce that anyway?
I say Fi. Oh, it's a Fi.
Okay. I will say Fi or Fi.
Fi. Okay.
When Fi actually mentions, oral storytelling, yeah, that's a really crappy way of, you know. And I actually applauded that. I was like, wow, that's pretty cool. They're connecting that. Because, I mean, truthfully, we go back to Ocarina of Time and we see, well, the Triforce of Courage was created by blah, and the Triforce of Wisdom was created by blah. But we go back to this, which apparently took place before all of this, and basically all it says was, oh, well, the Triforce was created by the old gods, and the goddess didn't want this used by gods. Only mankind can use it. This is one of the few Zelda games that uses the term human as well.
Hmm. Yeah, yeah, instead of Hylian or something like
that. Hylian or Hylian or whatever, right? Yeah. So that's very interesting, and I'm sure that all those Zelda timeline threads and storylines that people make up on the internet are going to, you know, have some fun sticking this in there.
I feel like this game helps those timelines a lot, and at the same time, fucks them up even further, you know?
Yeah,
It's just,
I have to wonder how much of that is intentional by Nintendo, and how much is just like, you know what, we just want to make a good game, and these themes and terms work better for this game, and the other games be damned, you know? Because, you know, this is just the game we want to make, and we don't want to limit ourselves to...
Well, that was Fi or Fi's point, right? Oh, yeah, okay, yeah. Well, legends can, you know, be told and be completely wrong. And yeah, I think that was basically their one little kind of wink toward all these conspiracy theorists.
That's their out, basically, to do that.
Which was really neat, to tell you the truth. I liked that.
No, I
read that, which is another thing that I kind of have a thing against. I read that, and I went... Oh, I laughed to myself.
You know, we were talking on the boards about this game possibly, you know, leaving a lot left to the imagination, so that, you know, they might suggest that there's a history behind somewhere without them, like, spelling it out for you. Like, they do a couple things where it makes you think, oh, well, that's kind of cool. I've never seen anything like this before. It makes me, you know, imagine that maybe... there was a whole other civilization before this that I'm not even aware of. And I don't think they really had to go that far into that kind of stuff. Like, I thought they did. They hit the right notes where they needed to hit them to suggest things without that interfering with whatever story that they wanted to tell in this game, if that makes sense.
Well, that's why they're so against even having a unified timeline, because they want to be able to tell the stories that they want to tell without being shoehorned into something.
So I wanted to touch on a couple things we were talking about. You both mentioned the combat, which I think was awesome. You know, even at the beginning, you know, you're still getting accustomed to things, but you're trying to fight, you know, we're talking about these spiders, the skulls that you have to fight.
Mm-hmm.
And even killing that for the first time is kind of like, what am I supposed to do here?
I've died twice.
And then, you know, at that point, you're a big Zelda veteran. You don't need to carry around hearts and... potions and whatever. I'm like, why am I dying so much? But, you know, you're trying to figure out how to kill the spider. You kill the spider, and you're like, that was really satisfying to, you know, figure out what you had to do, whether he was just on the ground or if he was on his web or whatever. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's really satisfying just to figure out how to kill a normal enemy in a Zelda game was pretty cool.
Well, that's the thing. Yeah, for sure. Like, I died twice fighting a Skulltula,
exactly.
Which is pretty sad. But awesome at the same time. Like, I saw this thing sitting on its web. I went, oh, a Skulltula. Okay. Well, it'll eventually turn around for me.
Nope.
It's not turning around for me. What the heck am I supposed to do?
Yeah.
So, and then, you know, eventually I figured it out, but, you know, I still wasn't 100% great with the controls. I ended up getting knocked backwards a few times, swearing at the TV.
Nice.
And it
was
funny
great.
It's funny because I personally, I just start, like, whacking it over and over again. I'm like, nothing's happening. And then once I hit it once and it turns around, I was like, oh,
I guess. Well, that's a testament to the learning curve of this game, though, that I found pretty interesting. I got a hold of it pretty well. Like, before the second dungeon, I was pretty much set with how I knew how to control things. It was a little more instinctual at that point. But with those spiders, I mean, Jamie knows this because, again, he and I talked a lot about this game as we progressed through it. I actually went to the entire first temple never killing a spider the correct way. I either drowned them, or I waited until they were hanging up high, and then I knocked them down, and then they fell on their back. But I didn't realize you could flip the sons of bitches like a coin. You know, with your
yeah, if they're
walking
that out
towards you, you just do an up slash.
Right, and it's so easy. And then then you just do the finisher move. You know, but
it's pretty sweet.
It was just
you're like, oh, yeah, of course that would flip it over.
It's not intuition to move my hand downward and then flip it up. Like, if anything, you want to slash down with, you know, hit it like a stick or like a sword.
I agree with you. That was actually one of the points in the game where, yeah, truthfully, I agree with you. That was one of the points in the game where I was surprised. I was like, whoa, this movement actually, you know, does an upward slash and actually will flip these guys over. I was amazed.
Yeah, it was pretty awesome. Now, the one thing I do take issue with a little bit in the game, I don't know if I can fault it for this, because, you know, there are other Zelda games that don't do this as well, but the combat doesn't really evolve in terms of, you know, you gaining new you know, like new techniques or anything like that.
Well,
you know,
you can't new weapons, but not new slashes or something.
Right. I mean, it's the sword play from the beginning is how it's going to be the entire game. And I personally kind of wish that you maybe got like an upgraded spin attack or something like that.
An upgraded spin attack would work. I think that just the fact that the sword play is the way that it is kind of why that happened.
Right. I mean, it's free enough that, you know.
Yeah.
But what about like in Wind Waker when you can do that really badass roll maneuver and then they do that
which
again.
Which is awesome.
And in Twilight Princess, you do it too. Why couldn't we have done that here? But then if you don't slash at the right time after you roll around them, then you don't hit them. You know, that would dynamically change the battle system and everything for the better. But
I think that, you know, as the first Zelda game that uses these quote-unquote one-to-one sword maneuvers, I think they did a good job at it because they knew that people needed to, you know, kind of wrap their brains around what they were doing. And by the time they were done doing it, the game was done.
Right.
Yeah, and right. I was thinking, you know, towards the end of the game, there's a moment where, you know, there's a lot of sword play. And that was the first time in the game that I thought to myself, like, you know, I kind of wish I could mow through enemies more than I'm kind of like, you kind of at the end of the game, you want to feel more powerful than you are.
One thing we should mention, then we should probably move on, is that the boss battles were also very gratifying, I felt. Even though some of them were better than others or more involved than others, they were still just fun. They were a lot different than your usual
there were
hit them three times, you know?
Definitely some pretty memorable boss fights in this game.
Yeah, I don't think there were any actual hit 'em three times bosses in the game. I mean, there were like a couple bosses that had that pattern to them, but at least you had an extra couple times to fight them.
Right. Yeah, I mean, but even so, like, if you're going to do something three times, you'd do it differently each time. So,
yeah.
Like, if you, the whale, I'm not good with remembering names, but the whale guy, when you have to eradicate that virus from him, parasite.
That was really cool. Yeah. That was probably my favorite boss in the game.
Yeah, such a badass battle. And you pretty much only have to just return his things three times and then he's gone for good. But it's still just the settings unique for a Zelda game.
Kind of figure that out by accident, though. And it's that was like, okay, this is really something that I could never have gotten in an older Zelda game because your control over the sword isn't that precise.
And that's right.
You can aim the projectiles back.
And it was funny because, you know, before this came out, we were all like, oh, is that the Zelda meets Wii Sports Resort? And this kind of brought the whole like aspect of Wii Tennis into into Zelda. It was like, oh, that's pretty cool. And we finally got to, you know, volley something back and forth. You know, which you kind of do in
which is a Zelda staple. That's right, a Zelda staple, but the way that they did it was really cool, because you're like, wait a second, I actually I have control over where I'm putting this thing.
And you're also solid ground, you're on a fucking flying whale, you know?
Yeah, I mean, everything they did, I think, in the game, even if it was grounded in a Zelda staple, they were able to throw enough curveballs into it to make it compelling throughout the entire adventure, I guess.
Totally. I agree 100%. I felt that the puzzles in the game generally felt very new. Mm-hmm. The combat felt very new, even when they went back to staples like that. When they went to that staple, I went, oh my god, this is, you know, a Link to the Past again.
Mm-hmm. You have to bomb a wall in this game.
Feels great.
You're like, when you have to bomb a wall in this game, you're like, oh yeah, I forgot I can do that. Because you're doing all these other things.
You can roll a ball or a bomb into a hole, you know, to like take care of an enemy or certain cracks. Like, yeah, it's fresh. I feel like it's fresh any way you slice it.
And, all right. Final thoughts or?
It rocked. It was a great experience. I had to smoke a cigarette afterwards.
That's basically how I felt. I was sitting here, and I remember my wife said she had to go take her friend home. She said, wait until you fight the last guy so I can watch. And when I did it, I finished it, and this is the first time, seriously, where I sat down during the credits and went, that was crazy. Like, that was really, that was a great experience. Like, even when I beat Ocarina of Time for the first time, which was great, by the way, don't get me wrong, I went, okay, yeah, I beat the game. That was really awesome. This one, I really felt that I beat the game. Like, when I fought the last boss, not to give anything away, I stood up. And and I like really like laid into them. And I woke up the next day kind of feeling kind of sore.
I actually still think it ended a little too abruptly. Like I thought maybe there was going to be another form or something.
It felt.
I kind of did too.
It felt a little anticlimactic.
Considering some of the spectacular, you know, set piece bosses that they had, you know, in the rest of the game, I was like, oh, okay, well, I mean, it was really cool for what it was, but
yeah. No, I agree with you there, but I don't know, there's just something about the fact that the final, like, boss, not to give too much away, was your skills that you learned throughout the game, you right. personally, like, not Link, you know, you're not throwing bombs at him or using whatever items.
To, like, these are, yeah,
which I did enjoy, by the way, I liked the Beetle.
Oh, that was really good, yeah.
This boss was, okay, you've played 40 hours of this game at least. What can you as a person do to kill this guy?
And even more so
and
than
that's
the,
what I liked about it.
Than the Ghirahim fights before it, you know, because
that's right.
It was kind of what you would expect after that, even. Your skills had to be up to a certain level. And then your shield blocking was very important in that final battle, I think. Unless I was doing
very
it with other people. But
yeah, yeah,
I didn't
yeah.
use the shield to block very much because I wasn't very good at it. But I got real good real quick against that final boss.
I used it more as the game went on.
And it felt really gratifying to do that, you know? I felt very
That's right. You raise your sword. You raise your sword. Awesome stuff happens. You know, you raise your sword. The awesome thing happens. You got a block right after. And it just, I thought it felt really
great. There was a nice back and forth in that final fight.
That's right. That's right.
Which kind of reminds me of the Wind Waker finale, which I always really loved. Yeah, a little bit. In terms of that. That back and forthness, and that, you know, it's pretty much fisticuffs with sharp
yeah,
knives, but
it's a little personal too.
Sword
yeah,
fight,
close, absolutely, yeah,
yeah, like one-on-one sword battle, personal up close, kind of crazy, awesome.
Yeah, yeah. I'll just say, you know, I think, you know, some of the gameplay concepts in the game, you know, make it one of the more memorable Zelda games. You know, I don't think the game's perfect, but. You know, it accomplishes a lot in that whole game, and definitely must play for all Wii owners, and definitely for me, top 10, top 5, you know, Wii games, top 3, I don't know.
Me too. Yeah, it's definitely up there.
And
we'll see how it fares upon subsequent playthroughs, but had a really good time playing through it the first time.
Topics, it's time for once again two podcasts in a row, the What Do You Think section, where I pluck things from the message boards like one would pluck a Pikmin from the ground or Miyamoto's garden, and I just wanted some real quick opinions from you guys for some things, you know, that we've seen on the boards lately. So really quick, let's go with, is the Wii the greatest system for platformers ever?
I think that it is the best system so far for quality platformers. The Super Nintendo definitely had this. The Super Nintendo came out, and you know, the main type of game was the platformer. We had Arrow the Acrobat and a bunch of other, you know, Me Too platformers. So we got a lot more platformers at the time, Playmates and all that stuff. The Wii is really neat in the fact that we got the companies going, okay, well, we can make a platformer, but we need to have some sort of edge to it. We got Donkey Kong Country Returns, which has so much quality to it. We got New Super Mario Bros. Wii, which I felt was tons of fun. So I don't know. I'm going to say because we can get the really good platformers from the Super Nintendo era on it using the Virtual Console, yes. For quality platformers, this was kind of a renaissance, yeah. I would say yes.
All right, Jamie, your thoughts?
You know, I have to say yes. I mean, basically have, you know, Mario, all the Mario games, you know, all the platformers that have come out on WiiWare. And, you know, if you want to include the Virtual Console, like, you can go back and revisit all those old games. So, you know, you get Donkey Kong, and
I would have to agree. It's probably one of the greatest. If I look at the games that I've purchased for each console, and yes, I was also like 4 to 10 when I was playing my NES, but I wasn't really buying my own games at the time. But the games that I own and the games that I love, most of the platformers are actually abundantly in this generation, like the ones you guys named. You know, if I look back, it's a little bit more towards Mario, and that's just a function of my lack of experience, perhaps. But this generation has been really wonderful for that. So, moving on, next question. GamePro just announced that they've shut down their magazine. Do you guys give a shit?
Nope. I mean, okay. Sorry.
Well, okay. Well, that was a misphrasing for me to be a jackass. Would you miss them? I mean, do you miss GamePro magazine or...
I was always a big Nintendo Power fan, so, you know, I can understand someone's affection, like having nostalgia for an old magazine like that. I never really got into GamePro. I mean, I feel bad for people who potentially lost their jobs or anything like that, but we've gotten to the point where I just want to, if I want news, then I'll look online, or we're in the Twitter world now, I guess you can say. So, you know, you get this instant news that kind of makes most magazines irrelevant unless they're going to offer a lot of content that I can't get online for free.
And GamePro to me is fun factor. That was always the thing. You know, they always had the fun factor out of five, right? So, I mean, it's kind of sad. It's always upsetting, especially in this day and age, people losing their jobs. But I haven't checked out GamePro in, well, since they had their magazine, really. You know what I mean? So, to me personally, I know it's GamePro.com or something that's lost what they had. And I feel bad for those people, but personally, I go to Negative World, and every once in a while, I'll check one up or something like that.
The last question then in the what do you think round is, Club Nintendo Awards are finally shipping, and what is your dream gift if you could pick a gold or platinum award? What would you like?
Being practical, something like a controller, you know, a special edition controller, or maybe a special edition version of a game that way I can actually play on like my Wii or on my 3DS.
See,
or even a soundtrack. That'd be nice.
Like, I think those things are cool. I just think that if they come out with like a soundtrack, or in the case of they did the Doc Lewis Punch Out fight, I don't like it when they limit that stuff to the platinum reward. Because like if they had the Doc Lewis thing on WiiWare, I probably would have bought it. Or, you know, so I think...
Well, see, that's my thing. The Doc Lewis thing would have been an amazing prize if it was on disc.
Sure.
Like, give it its own little package and put it on disc, and I would have bought that over... I would have chosen that over the Mario hat.
Yeah, but, I mean, when it's a download, it's like, well, why don't you just make this available to everyone? It's like you have it right there.
Practicality is important to me. What I would prefer is maybe I wouldn't mind a Wario hat to go with that Mario one.
What about like a Mario themed Snuggie? How about that?
I've already made one of my own, so I don't really need it.
Oh, all right.
That's
so yeah, like something like that, like something fun that you can't get anywhere else, but something that if it comes out and it's exclusive to that, you don't get really pissed off. Or
honestly,
something.
I mean, this is a dream gift right here, but a Wavebird for the Wii. Would be pretty sweet because I love the Wavebird controller. Mm-hmm.
And so I'm stealing your answer right there.
Yeah,
100%. Smash Brothers.
Yeah, exactly.
I have to imagine that they'll come out with some sort of wireless classic controller at some point, just as an excuse to sell more stuff.
Now we've entered the Super Mario 2 Dream World, because that
would be awesome. That's ridiculous. What do we do that for?
Paul, start us off. You're going to talk about Xenon Blades. What is this? I've heard a little bit about it.
Ah, yes, the game. The infamous yet famous game. I call it Xenoblade. Others call it Xenoblade. And I guess you call it Xenoblade. That's cool. Xenoblade. This is a game that I know a lot of people... First of all, I'm going to say... This game has finally been announced for North America. That is very exciting. I mean, the Wii, my Wii, unfortunately, had very little play going on until Zelda came out. I guess Kirby gave it a bit, and then Zelda, but I mean, there was very little play, except for this game. And for you all who have not imported it, it's finally coming. And don't act like, oh, it doesn't matter anymore, blah, 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 blah. No, this is a very good game. And this is coming from someone who has yet to finish it. I haven't finished it, but I've put over 40 hours into it. The unfortunate thing for me is that it was sold out in Europe really fast. Really fast. Right when it came out, it was sold out. So by the time I ordered it, it took a month and a half for it to actually ship to me. And I finally got it. And by the time I was halfway through it, all of a sudden we had Mario coming out for the DS. We had Zelda coming out. We had Skyrim coming out, which is a game that I got into. Batman came out. My goodness. We hit the Christmas rush. And for me, no matter how good a game is, Mario always takes precedence. So no matter what I'm doing, I drop everything and I play Mario. Xenoblade is almost the the WRPG of JRPGs. And by the way I say that is, in a WRPG, generally, you have a little bit more control, a little bit more free roaming experience. In this game, everything follows kind of a story formula, and you don't get to places until you're supposed to, but you have so many side quests in Xenoblade that it's just so open. The world is huge. Even if I stopped playing it after this 40 plus hour experience, I will have gotten more than my money's worth from it. Going on a side quest and getting new gear and getting experience and stuff like that is just, it's kind of a WRPG experience in a JRPG. And I can't tell you enough. You need to purchase this game. If you own a Wii, you need to purchase this game. This is the JRPG we've been waiting for since I don't even know what. I haven't played a game that's like this. I really enjoyed JRPGs back in the day. Final Fantasy 13 did kind of, let me down a lot. But this game is the anti-Final Fantasy 13. This is the game where you really get to explore. You really get to, and for exploring, you get rewarded. It is a really good game, and hopefully, they might not change the voice acting. You might still have the British voices. What? What's going on? What? But that's fine. That's good, actually. I actually enjoy the crazy English voice acting. But in the version that I got when I imported it, we also had the choice of listening to the Japanese voice acting. And I'm betting, because Nintendo's doing such Nintendo of America is doing such a weird way of actually giving the game to us. You have to go to GameStop to order it. I'm betting that it still has the same thing. I bet it's the same thing, but you can actually play it on your Wii without messing around with homebrew like I did. It is a very good game. You're going to really like the characters. You're going to like the exploration. The characters repeat a lot of what they say a lot, which can get obnoxious. But it is totally worth it. And if anyone has any questions, I'm free to answer them. And I haven't even finished it yet. Well, but I'm going back to it in January, 100%.
I'm definitely intrigued by this game. I was since the beginning, even before it even came out in Europe or Japan. But I know very little about it still. I have one question for you, but first, the one thing that does intrigue me the most, and I like my mind was blown when I heard this, is that the premise, I guess, is that these two giant godlike beings are in this kind of cosmic fight. They both end up dying at the same time from blows to each other, and life sprouts on them. And that's where the actual world takes place. So like I was listening to Radio Free Nintendo many weeks ago, and they were talking about how they go get over a hill, and then they can see like the giant body and head of like the other guy, in which essentially it's like a planetoid almost in the sky, but it's just, that's the perspective you see when you're on the other guy's shoulder kind of thing. And that just sounds fascinating. And I know that the world's supposed to be huge, but that just makes it sound like it really does promise, pay off what it promises. So that's really cool. I mean, is that kind of the setup?
So when I first heard this, like back in the day, back when it was first announced in Japan, they were like, oh, you're fighting on the back of these, these things. I went, oh, well, this game can't be very big. You're fighting on the backs of some things. yeah, that is the premise. And you know what? I was wrong. This game is huge. You get to a point called the Bionis Knee or the Bionis Leg, and you go, oh my goodness, this game is gigantic. Huh. You're on the leg of this. Hmm. We have the Bionis versus the Mechonis, and you can put together what you want to with that. You get to the Bionis Leg, and it's huge. And you think that the game at that point has really, you know, shown you what it could give you, this giant overworld, but it's only just starting. And that's all I'm going to say. Like, I got to a point where I finished the Bionis Leg, and I got to a point where I went, oh my goodness, this part after the Bionis Leg is this huge.
That's the longest bone in the body, there, the femur.
Yeah, that's right, the femur. But that's just the Bionis. We have these two things fighting it out, right? And, you know, they're both, you know, standing there. They're not in the middle of space. They're like in the middle of this ocean, basically. And, you know, I'm going to tell you, this is a huge game. But I'm going to tell you right now that it kind of serves two types of people. You can go through the game, you know, point to point, or you can go through the game, finish this side quest, finish that side quest. There are many, I'm not even joking, tons of side quests to do in the game that will increase the amount of time you spent on it. Now, I was a person who really enjoyed doing the side quests. So I'd finish a side quest here, get some experience there, finish a side quest there, and get some experience or some whatever, like some items. And I really enjoyed that. And to tell you the truth, I don't even think I've made it to the middle of the story yet, and I put over 40 hours into it.
You know, I've heard that from other sources too, though, that it's truly that big without just repeating things, like doing the same quests over and over, that kind of thing. It's truly that long of a game.
That's right. And I'm just going to say this out here. Some people might get turned off by the fact that, oh, the game's so long. But this is a gamer's game. You can choose if you want to do all that stuff. Now, if you do it all, by the time you actually get to the main story, it might be a little bit easier because you gain so much experience doing the side quests. But the game gives you so many options. You can do these side quests, or this is the other thing. You can control the game using any of the members of your party. So you have the main member of your party who can control this special blade, or you can be, you know, another member of your party. It's completely up to you. By the time you meet more and more people, you can decide to, you know, continue the game as one person, as the computer controls the others, or maybe be another person and just see what you can do. It's a gamer's game. That's all I'm going to say. Like, you have so much choice.
Does it feel overwhelming in that regard, and that, like, okay, you feel like you have too much to do?
That's a good question, because when I first started the game, I did feel overwhelmed. I'm not going to lie. You need to start the game with the good mindset. When I first started it, I was overwhelmed, and I went, I don't know if I can do this. But then, you know, I gave it about 5 more hours, and I went, wow, this game's basically giving me the choice to do this or not. Right? And if you're OCD, or you have, you know, you have those tendencies to really complete everything, this game is going to take you forever. And that's great. But if you're not, this game is going to take you how long you want it to take you, because you can go from point A to point B, or, you know, finish everything up in the game that there is to do. For me, unfortunately, it came out around the time, of course, where all of these big games came out, Mario and Zelda and all that stuff. And I'm going to say it right now, in a way, this is kind of the JRPG version of Skyrim. And I know that a lot of people, maybe some people listening to this, have been playing Skyrim, which is a WRPG style game. That's a game where you kind of go everywhere and you can do side quests galore. This is kind of the JRPG version. This is kind of the JRPG version of that. And that's really good to say, because we haven't had that in a very long time on any system. You know, Final Fantasy hasn't hit that type of thing for a long time. I don't think it ever really has hit what Xenoblade has hit for us.
Yeah, like, when was even the last, like, Japanese RPG that we had where you had that kind of freedom to, you know... You know, I'm talking about, like, going back to, like, Super Nintendo, where you could roam this entire continent or whatever.
This is kind of its own kind of game. I mean, we can go back to Final Fantasy VII, we can go back to Final Fantasy VI, or Chrono Trigger, And, you know, there's always the side quests and stuff like that. But the world in this, you know, these two giants fighting is huge.
Well, I guess another difference is that, you know, when you look at older games like Final Fantasy VI or even looking at something like Tales of Symphonia, when you're roaming the world map, you're roaming it on like a macro level. Like towns are just symbols of towns, but from what, like, I don't know a whole lot about Xenoblade, but like the whole game pretty much takes place in real time. It's not like you go into a map mode. Like your transition from going from a town to the quote unquote like overworld map is just you walking outside of the town.
That's right. And you know, that brings me to something. This game is set, there's none of that. All right, you leave a town, awesome. You still see the town at its proper size. That's, you can still see really the buildings cool. in the distance, right? And that's really good. You still see the town. You go out of town to, like, fight some certain monsters to finish a side quest. You can still see maybe even the person who sent you off.
Does it feel, at any point, do they give you, like, a warping mechanic, or does it just feel too long to get somewhere? Because I feel like that could start to get annoying.
That's the other thing. It gives you straight out the ability to warp to certain points and the ability to set the time, because there's a day-night cycle. And in the day-night cycle, right in the game, you can set the exact time that you're at. And it doesn't penalize you or anything. It can say, okay, so you're going to stand out here till 6 o'clock in the evening. So you can see certain people.
Does it naturally progress anyway?
Yeah, it will. It'll naturally, okay. It's not like Zelda where, you know, you have to do the day night by sleeping. This is one where it naturally progresses, but if you have to meet an NPC at 3 a.m. for some reason, you can go to that spot and set the time for 3 a.m. because there's so much to do in the game gives you the ability to do that. So you don't have to feel overwhelmed about being in certain places at certain times.
Plus you don't have to waste your time if there's so much to do.
That's right. That's right. So it gives you...
sense, just because I think there's a lot of games where they do have that time mechanic, but it can be so inconvenient to have to wait, and it, like, the game tries to be like believable in that, oh, it takes this long for the sun to come up or whatever, but you know, in the end it's just like kind of frustrating.
Well, that's the thing, you don't, and even still, like in Zelda, like Ocarina of Time, we had do 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 boo 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 boo. In this, all you have to do is you go down to your menu, you click your button, and you say what time it is, and there it is. Because the game is so big, it's not going to waste your time. Once you figure out how to warp to certain places, and you can warp to any place in the entire map at any time, and what time it is, you have it right there in the palm of your hand. You can take care of everything. And that's the thing. I mean, the characters, when they're in battle, will repeat the same things over and over. Oh, it's Rhine time. It's Rhine time. It's Rhine time. And that can get kind of annoying. But overall, the game is very good, and the battle system is very good, and it eases you into it very nicely. And I'm going to tell you the truth. Right now I'm playing Skyrim. This is kind of my anti-Skyrim in a way. I'm not playing Skyrim right now, but once I'm done Batman, I'm going back to Skyrim and Xenoblade at the same time. And I'm going to be balancing these two in January. Two very good styles of RPG, and I think they're both on par with one another. Unfortunately, Skyrim, of course, gets tons and tons of press, and Xenoblade only got tons of press because of Project Rainfall. And at this point, there's a lot of people who are kind of put out, oh, I don't care about this anymore. They need to care about it, because you know what? It's a good game. No matter what Nintendo did, what you feel Nintendo did to you, this is a good game that's worth playing. And it's going to take a lot of time, considering the Wii has very little coming out for it in the future, from what we can tell, and we all know that. Xenoblade is really going to, you know, eat up some of those hours.
That's what
sure.
I was
going to
say. Do we have? We don't have an official release date on this, do we?
Well, GameStop has it listed for Monday, April 2nd.
Okay.
The Wii, this poor little system, it needs your attention. Give it your attention, at least that bit of amount of attention.
I got a few quick questions. One, going back on the draw distance thing. So does it do any weird blur effects? Or like if you can see an NPC until your eyesight in the game literally wouldn't be able to see it. I mean, it sounds like the models never, there's no gimmicks to be easier on the process or anything. Like you literally will be able to see as far as you can see. Is that true?
I mean, like The game generally, I mean, as a standard definition Wii game, and we've come to the point where we do understand that the Wii, you know, the games, I do feel, I'm going to go back on Zelda for a second. After playing a lot of these games on my PC, I'm not even saying the Wii is incapable. I'm saying that Zelda would have been nice to play at a slightly higher definition so it wasn't so jaggy looking. Sure. You know what I'm saying?
They have because screenshots it was a very, out there. It looks awesome.
Yeah, the screenshots look great because the game is beautiful. Right. It is a beautiful looking game. It's just the Wii is incapable of actually showing us the game the way that the people who made it want it to look. Xenoblade is the same way in the sense that we have this huge world, these crazy British characters, and it's just huge. You're still, yeah, you're going to see these people, you're going to see these enemies, and generally, enemies generally will not battle you unless you choose to engage them in a battle. You'll see them on the screen, and you can choose to fight them, and you will choose to fight them, because it's really fun. But you'll see them. You can see them way off in the distance. Yeah, for sure.
Okay. Yeah, very cool. It sounds like a really great game, and even though I feel like I maybe should do a little more research on it, at the same time, I feel like I'm just ready to lay down my pre-order.
All right.
Yeah, I think it's definitely going to scratch an itch that we haven't really been able to... I mean, in terms of like a Japanese RPG, it's going to scratch an itch that... like no game has really done since, I don't know, like Tales of Symphonia, I guess. But even,
yeah, for sure. In
terms of being a Japanese kind of, more of a guided RPG, but it sounds like it has a lot of freedom in it, so.
Yeah, and I'm going to say this one last thing just to let everyone who's a little worried know. It may overwhelm you at first. You may get a little scared of the combat at first because it throws, like for the first few hours, it throws at you so many ideas that it might scare you off, but truthfully, you're going to figure it out really fast, and it is worth playing through. Like, if you hit a part where you go, oh, well, the game wants me to do this in combat, and I've already been used to combat, and it wants me to throw this in there, what the heck's going on? Deal with it, because it isn't that hard to figure out, and it is totally, totally worth getting through. And that's basically all I have to say about that.
The last thing I gotta say is that it sounds like Nintendo is gonna be bringing the rain come April showers, bring May flowers, you know what I mean?
You've been sitting on that one, eh?
Fuck yes, I have. And it wasn't even executed probably, but I had to say it. It's kind of how I roll.
And you know, I'm in the middle of playing Batman right now, and I feel like just playing Xenoblade.
Whoa.
But I won't. I must be Batman, because Batman is a fantastic game. But I'm not going to talk about that.
And speaking of Batman. Guys, and let's move on to Jamie's topic, which, if you didn't guess, was about people with hoarse voices.
So what's your topic about?
So we were talking about Batman, and
Batman. We were talking about a new game coming out.
No, we were talking
Robin.
Anyway, I actually pushed back getting Batman a little bit because Zelda came out, but I've finally been able to get my hands on it and put a few hours into it. I was a big fan of Arkham Asylum. I'm a big superhero fan in general, and I've always been interested in games based on superheroes because, you know, they're all my favorite characters. You finally get to, you know, control them in a game. But I feel like, you know, when you look back at, like, the history of superhero games, I feel like only recently, like, when you look back, maybe GameCube, PS2, is when these kind of games really started to show, like, their true potential and what they could be. So, like, looking back, when I was a kid, if you wanted to play an X-Men game, Like, I think we had, like, Spider-Man versus the X-Men, and it was kind of like a rinky-dink little action platformer. And you could be the different characters, and they'd all have unique abilities, but it wasn't the most immersive experience by any stretch of the imagination. You know, we had games like Maximum Carnage and Separation Anxiety, so you could play as, like, Spider-Man and Venom. We had the X-Men arcade game, and I don't know if we can count the Ninja Turtles as a superhero group. Can we do that? That's,
Oh, yes.
In Europe, I believe they're the Hero Turtles.
They are, yes, that's right. The TV and they're mutants, Hero Turtles.
So, you know, we had all these beat-em-ups where they honestly kind of felt like the same game, just with different coats of paint on them. They're all like Final Fight, even though Turtles in Time and those games were all really fun to play. But I think where the turning point for me was when we entered like this, the birth of the 3D era. If we look at N64, PlayStation 3D, like I know we had 3D before that, but you know, when console gaming went 3D, you know, when you first played Mario 64, it was like, wow, like I'm actually playing as Mario and I'm thinking about different things that he can do in a 3D world. Like, it feels like you're in his world and he's doing things that you almost feel like you always knew he could do. Like, he's doing backflips and stuff like that. And, you know, they had a Spider-Man game on PlayStation 1 and N64 was the other console. But, you know, and it was kind of like you could swing around a little bit and you could kind of be like Spider-Man, but for me, the turning point was when Spider-Man 2 came out. You know, I was really excited for that movie when it came out. And that's another thing I want to touch on, but, you know, when you see Spider-Man swinging on these long webs and you're going through this big, sprawling metropolis, and you feel like you're doing Spider-Man things the way that you see it in the movies. And, I mean, the movies were, you know, something to take into account too, because finally we're able to see these characters do all these spectacular things in the movies, so we have an idea of, you know, it's like another step into, wow, like this could be real and I could be in this, and you know, it's quite a step over just putting a Final Fight game out and putting Spider-Man paint on it, and that's your Spider-Man game. So you know, we finally have the technology to really be immersive with all of these games. I mean, you can say that about like any game in general, but I think what's different about the whole superhero thing is that we have all of these, you know, preconceptions about what these characters can do and how they move. And I think that can be a challenge to a game developer in terms of accomplishing that, because they have a lot to live up to, you know, what's in people's minds about, you know, how does Spider-Man move and all that kind of stuff. So that era, they started doing a little bit more of that. I never really got to play the Incredible Hulk game on GameCube. I don't know if either of you got to play it.
No.
But there's a game called Hulk Ultimate Destruction. It's basically like you're in a big city, like a Grand Theft Auto city, but you play the Hulk and you just smash the shit out of things. And that's great, because, like, that's, if you're playing a Hulk game, that's exactly what you want to do. Like, you can pummel buildings until they fall down and all that kind of stuff. And they had X-Men Legends, where it was, like, an action RPG where you play as the X-Men. Patrick Stewart does the voice of Professor Xavier, so, you know, now that's another layer where we can actually have the voices of all these characters in the games, and it makes it feel more authentic. So that kind of, you know, brings us to where we are today, where, you know, we had Arkham Asylum come out a couple years ago, and we had Arkham City just came out, and I've actually been putting a little bit of time into X-Men Origins Wolverine, which is a terrible movie. No one should ever see it. Don't ever bother seeing that. But the game's actually pretty fun. You know, in terms of looking at a licensed game, it's actually pretty surprising. It's basically you play Hugh Jackman and he's really pissed off and it's really bloody and it's a pretty good time. And you know, you feel like Wolverine. And so now all these games are basically you know, I think, like I said earlier on, it's like you're fulfilling childhood dreams of, you know, like when you're a little kid and you're a Spider-Man fan, and you put your, like my little nephew will put his little, his fingers out and like do a little thwip with his, you know, shooting web out of his hands. And like these games kind of make you feel like you can do that. And just, I was kind of thinking about, you know, how this is done. And, you know, I was thinking about what I'd like to see moving on forward going to Wii U. But, you know, all these games, the good superhero games that we're looking at, they all have a unique movement. Like Batman's going to move kind of slowly and menacing, but he's going to be quick in combat. You know, the world's kind of like his playground, and he's stalking all his enemies. The Spider-Man games, you're really nimble, and you're swinging around. Wolverine can pounce on his enemies from afar. So just, I mean, it's common sense, I guess, but that's something I don't think that they were always aware of, and I think that it's something important. And then that goes across other games, too. Like, if he plays in a Donkey Kong game, Donkey Kong is going to move different than Mario would, because he's a big gorilla, kind of. So, what were you going to say?
Well, I was just thinking, you know, like you were saying about the Wii and the Wii U and everything, and about the future of these games, I wonder if the Wii U's focus on the tablet's going to actually revert back a little. I mean, again, I will admit to everyone out there in the listening space that I don't play pretty much any superhero video games in my entire life. I just don't really play those kind of games. Not that anything against them, but I'm just not that into comics or that kind of thing. So the properties don't entice me as much as other ones. But I mean, I would think that Spider-Man games would be a bit more fun, or at least, like you were saying, you're going to act a little bit more like Peter Parker because of the fact that you can fling your wrist to shoot your web, that kind of thing. Now we're moving back towards buttons a little bit with the Wii U, and I wonder if that's going to hinder things. So I'd like your opinion on that. But then also, you were talking a little bit about how as the GameCube era showed up, that superhero games got a bit more involved and deeper in terms of recreating what the character is actually supposed to be about. And I wonder if that's more or less because the technology's there, or if developers are more excited to do it now because they have more tools, which is, I guess, technology related as well, or if maybe they just didn't care as much because it was more of a cash-in thing back in the day, although I'm sure there's a lot of cash-in now. Like, what do you think, you know, both you guys, what do you guys think about how the mindset of the licensed superhero game has gone since the NES days, or even before? I'm not sure if there's any on ColecoVision, but...
Well, your first question about, you know, motion control and something like a Spider-Man game, I actually will admit I've never played either Spider-Man 3, or I haven't played Edge of Time or Shattered Dimensions, and I've played Web of Shadows, but I have that on PC. I found it for cheap somewhere. From what I read, and I don't know if this is necessarily the Wii's fault, but they have tried implementing, you know, you flick right to swing your right web and left to do your... I'd always read that it was done pretty clunky, and that you're swinging so much for the most part that it, you know, in these games you're swinging all the time pretty much, and that I imagine that would probably get old pretty quickly and may not necessarily add anything to the actual game. It's just kind of like a superficial way to make you... I mean, maybe it takes away from you pressing a button, but I think the way it's been implemented is basically that the waggle has just been taking the place of a button.
So maybe going back to buttons, more or less, with the Wii U and using the tablet might actually make them better.
See, that's what I was thinking. Like in regards to Spider-Man, at least, and this can go in regards to Batman as well, because I mean, it's going to be the most obvious use for the tablet, and we've seen it on DS, and I almost hate even suggesting this, but you are in this sprawling metropolis, and it would be nice to have a map nearby to, you know, catch your bearings on where you are, because these cities are huge, and you can get lost pretty easily,
so
I think.
So Google Maps on the Wii U?
Yeah, I mean,
pretty much.
Or... you think about it this way, Peter Parker's a photographer, maybe they could integrate some sort of photography element into it where you're actually holding the tablet like a camera to take pictures of some guys robbing a bank or something like that. So they could work that angle into it somehow.
You know, in the demo for Wii U, there's the Ninja Star flinging thing. And doesn't Batman have projectiles that are like that? Like a Batarang or something? I mean...
He does.
Maybe, you know, they can implement that.
The way it's implemented in the Arkham games is, you know, you have a variety of ways of throwing your Batarang. So you can do, like, a quick throw while you're in combat. And that's just, like, a quick tap of, like, one of the trigger buttons.
Mm-hmm.
You also can, you can throw a regular Batarang at a guy from like far ways away, and you have like remote control Batarangs where you can control, and I think that's what Plute was maybe or Paul was suggesting when we were talking about the Beetle in Zelda.
Right.
How it's similar, like you can use the remote control Batarang to even like peek around a corner if you can't get around a corner, you're trying to figure out where you're going. Some people have suggested they have, like, the detective mode in the game, which is basically, like, if you've seen Dark Knight, and he's got that kind of, like, sonar where he can see everything, and he can see guys that are armed and get information about things. People have suggested putting that on the tablet. I'm kind of against that just because I think you're going into detective mode so much that I think it would be excessive. I don't know if how the flicking would necessarily add to the experience. What I've always wanted to do, and I was thinking about this in regards to Captain America, I was thinking about all these different ways you could use Wii U on the these various, you know, games. But I've always kind of wanted to see... You remember Boom Blocks, where you could...
Mm-hmm.
Basically point, hold a button, and then flick as hard as you can to throw a ball.
Yeah.
Like, I wish we would have gotten that in more games, that like 3D action games, or like a Yoshi game where you could throw eggs that way or something like that. I always thought that would have... So maybe if you're Captain America, you could aim your shield and then throw your shield like a frisbee or something like that.
The funny thing about the Batarang, or the remote control Batarang, is my wife is actually sitting here watching me. She watched me play Zelda quite a bit, too. And as I was controlling the Batarang, she went, "Oh, look, Batman has his own Beetle." So, I mean, in a way, like, and this is another topic that I was thinking about discussing.
I think I know exactly what you're going to say.
Games are somewhat, you know, becoming the same. Not in a, like, they're kind of becoming similar to one another, if you know what I mean.
Oh, I was going to say something else, but I've noticed that with Metroid and Zelda, both.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, this new Zelda is very Metroid-like.
If the trends continue, I mean, Metroid and Zelda have almost verged into like the same genre as each other. I mean, they were both adventure games, but just the manner in which you progress through both of them became so
similar.
Yeah, just
getting through the levels. Yeah, just getting through the levels of the new Zelda is very Metroid-like, and I agree with that very much. What were you going to say?
I was going to say that Batman and Zelda have and Metroid, for that matter, have a surprising number of similarities. I mean, you work your way... When you navigate in Arkham City, you're navigating around a big open world, and you have these special tools that help you navigate the world. But from time to time, you'll go into, like, the Penguin's lair. And in a way, that's kind of... You know, I've seen it in the IGN review for Arkham City, but it's kind of like going into a Zelda dungeon.
That's
where...
a dungeon. Yeah, no, I agree 100%. I was like, oh, well, this is the Penguin dungeon.
Right,
oh,
but
this
doesn't...
is the...
You know, it feels like it's part of the game. You know, it's
100%.
It's weaved into the narrative of the story.
So it's less of a sandbox type game, and it's more split up.
No, it's the thing that I think he's getting at, and I definitely think, is that the Batman game actually. And I'm going to tell you, if you don't play superhero games, please play the Batman games, because these games are just phenomenal.
Well, I mean, I do have a 360, but I probably will
wait
till. You
should go for it.
I was
getting around
until the
license. They're just really solid, like, action adventure.
They're very good games. But yeah, it's more organic. You're not like, oh, well, now I'm in dungeon number one, I better collect the Batarang piece that I need to complete the Batarang to get to the Temple of Time.
And this is spoilers, but in that Penguin area, you do get a new upgrade. Like, Batman gets a weapon, but the way he gets his items, it's not like he's opening a chest or anything. He's, like, you know, he's finding... That would be awesome, by the way.
I pictured it in my head.
I've got the hookshot now.
He already has his hookshot at the beginning.
That's right. But, yeah, I mean, it's... he gets things really organically, and he'll get an item while he's having a conversation with Alfred, basically. And then by the end of the cutscene, it's like he's got the thing, and it's like, that's awesome.
He's badass about it. He's like, well, this is what's going on. Click, click. He's like readying it for action, mentioning it.
I want to touch on this since you mentioned the word. Like, really, before we wrap this topic up. I think it's important for all these superhero games to kind of be badass from the beginning. Like, the beginning of
Instead
Arkham...
Instead of building up, you mean?
Yeah, like, at the beginning of... I mean, there's still very much a building up in the Arkham games, but when you start the first game, Arkham Asylum, you know, your first fight with, like, three or four guys, you're countering a guy behind you, and then you're punching the guy in front of you, and then you jump over a guy... And then the game might tell you how to do, like, a special takedown. And it's all very seamless. And, I mean, that's kind of the nature of that combat system. But it makes you feel awesome. Like, and just watching the animations hook up almost perfectly. Where a guy will kick you from behind. And then when you hit the counter button, it's not like Batman just goes into a pre-triggered animation every time. He'll actually, depending on how the enemy's attacking him, he'll grab the leg... Or he'll elbow a guy in the shoulder, or whatever.
Which even gets better in the second one. You have two guys attacking you, and you do it at the right time. He'll attack those two guys at the same time, and, you know, punch them both at the same time, or slam their heads together.
That's pretty.
And
cool.
It's actually really, really cool. And I was going to say the beginning of Arkham City, I think, really jumps into the badassness of it. In the fact that, and I don't think this is really spoilers because it's the beginning of the game. Are we okay with talking about the beginning of the game?
Yeah, I was obsessed with this game and I didn't really mind the spoiler. So
okay, so you know you aren't Batman at the beginning. You're Bruce Wayne, and you are handcuffed, and you are beating the crap out of guys in these handcuffs as
awesome.
Bruce Wayne,
it's
and
like,
you're just like, oh my god,
really...
this guy. And it's not just because of the license. It's because, well, A, the license. Batman is one of the best licenses because this guy is just an everyman who ended up... Well, he's not an everyman because he's very rich. But he's a guy without superpowers. That's what makes Batman cool. But we have this game where, you know, you're playing as this character without superpowers. And the way that they do it, because of going back to what you had asked, Steven...
Mm-hmm.
We have the ability to do this now. We have the ability to have an open world. We have this awesome guy doing all these awesome moves that actually look really awesome.
Yeah,
right?
I mean,
and it just feels, without you reusing the word visceral, which is a word that's been thrown around a lot lately, it feels very visceral. You know, he does his signature Batman back punch attack, and he, you know, counters guys properly, slams their heads together. And when you're handcuffed together as Bruce Wayne, I don't even understand how they don't understand how you are Batman, first of all. But it feels great.
No, well, they're really able to do all of that. I mean, that's just the core combat system. Like, they made the combat system at its core really solid. So that, that's not at the expense of building his, you know, equipment, his artillery later in the game. You're getting the grappling hook stuff and doing all these sorts of things. So, you know, it feels a lot like Zelda. So... really just exemplifies where I want these games to go. It's, you know, you're powerful from the beginning. It's not like you're playing Superman and you're getting your ability to fly and then you're getting your
flying
ability to
rings.
Shoot heat vision. Yeah, fly through rings. I think we had to mention Superman 64 at some point. But that's like the quintessential worst way to ever go about making a superhero game.
So the last thing that I guess I want to add to this really quick is... So it sounds like what's happened is that over the years, developers have had more tools, and so they've been able to more fully realize the actual thing. Like, it's almost going from, like, the comic book, which is the 2D image, down to, which I know movies are 2D as well, but down to like the more 3D worlds of live action films or TV shows. So as that's progressed to show more things in more detail, the games have been able to do that, not just in graphics, but also in like how Batman would take out this enemy. You know, you're only going to have one animation in an NES game, but now, you know, he can clunk two guys' heads together and beat the crap out of them in both ways. And then also it sounds like, and maybe I'm generalizing this a little bit, but as time has passed, I mean, a lot of time has passed since the NES, you know, it's been 25 plus years. So I guess there's been 25 more years of Batman content to feed off of. You have more new enemies that have been, you know.
To be fair, and I'm going to jump in there, I'm going to go back to Batman Returns for the SNES. And in Batman Returns, it was basically a Final Fight clone, almost 100%. The only difference that I noticed when I was a kid was that you could clonk two guys' heads together. If you happen, you know, in Final Fight, you're Mike Hagar. You pick a guy up, you can give them a pile driver. In Batman Returns, you could, if there were two guys close to each other, you could clonk their heads together. And that was neat to me. But in this, you have, you know, the characters are basically the same. It's just in this game, all of a sudden, especially Arkham City, we have the ability with this open city to have so many more of Batman's rogues gallery to jump in. We have, you know, the Joker, of course, and the Riddler, of course, which isn't a spoiler because they're both in Arkham Asylum. But we have so many different guys who have been in Batman for a really long time, but we have a more natural way of moving around a city, running into things that are happening. Maybe there's an assault happening over here, or maybe the assault's being done by the Mad Hatter. Who knows, right? So that's pretty neat.
You know, and you kind of expressed concern that it was like an open world game. It's not as much a GTA style game as much as it is a Metroid Zelda game that takes place in a giant city, kind of. I mean, that's really the best comparison I can say.
Yeah, because I mean, in Grand Theft Auto, the controls take a kind of a back seat, and in this, it's very refined.
You still have very much focused areas that are designed. That, you know, they have level design, basically. It's not like it's just 100%.
I would disagree with, kind of, in GTA 3 or more. It's more like they designed the world as a cohesive, just single sandbox, and then just
I mean, there's still plenty to do. I mean, there's like a million things to do, but you know, if I'm really excited to see where this goes on Wii U, you know. From what I'm playing of the game right now, I can tell I might even think about picking it up on Wii U if they do some really cool things with it. You know, whether they have us, you know, decoding, you know, Batman hacks a lot of things in the game. Maybe we'll be hacking things on the tablet, or maybe he's using some new gadget that kind of looks like a tablet to do stuff. It's kind of funny that in Arkham City, his decoder conveniently has dual analog on it. So you're basically mimicking what Batman is doing. So it's kind of cool. I mean, it's kind of, you can tell they kind of shoehorned it in there. Or, you know, I think the game, from what I played, I don't think it really needs motion control, just because I think the combat right now is just too fast paced to introduce waggle into it, which is kind of what I would expect they would do.
Because that's the difference between Zelda and what they would do with that. Zelda isn't waggle. Zelda was sword fighting, and I'm going to say Zelda was just straight up sword fighting. That felt great. But what they would do with Batman, if they did, unfortunately, would be just if they would just kind of throw in, oh, you got to waggle this, you got to waggle that. And I don't think they'd do that, because it's way too good of a game to throw.
Yeah, I think this is one of the examples for Wii U that I think the tablet could definitely offer some really cool possibilities. And let me just say that I think some asynchronous multiplayer would be really cool in this game. Maybe one player is on the tablet as Batman, and the other players are playing on the TV as guys with guns, and then the person is... It's kind of like how they did it in Splinter Cell, if anyone played Double Agent or anything like that.
Well, but, they're aiming it to be a launch title for the Wii U, I believe, so...
Okay, so we saw a lot of that at E3, so hopefully we get some asynchronous multiplayer out of it. I think it'd be really cool.
Thank you. right, guys. So what is the first game that you think of when I say Game Boy Advance?
Metroid Zero Mission.
All right. And Jamie?
Metroid Fusion, actually.
Interesting.
Which is Metroid. What I actually meant.
Oh, jeez.
All right. Well, fair enough. So Metroid games. Interesting. Okay.
Metroid Fusion is our answer, apparently.
Yeah. For me...
I like both of them. For you.
For me, it would probably be Golden Sun. And there's a reason for that, and the reason that I asked in the first place, because the Virtual Console has been on the Wii for many, many years now, and it was a pretty new and compelling idea at the time. It kind of made a really big selling point for the Wii in the first place. You can obviously buy your old games that you've been playing, but you can't play anymore because your NES is dead or your Super Nintendo has beer on it or something. And with my NES is working and had a beer spilled on it many years ago, but. Anyway, the point is, so, now we have this on the 3DS, and Nintendo did the whole ambassador thing. I mean, not to give you the whole history of this damn thing, but we are getting 10 Game Boy Advance games very soon, before the end of the year, for 3DS ambassadors. And only 5 of them are known, but it doesn't matter because they quote unquote don't plan on selling these, which I don't personally believe. I believe that they will eventually. I don't know why they're being so secretive about it. Although I will eat my own shoe if they, in fact, never do release Game Boy Advance games, and this whole topic will be moot. My brain is aflutter with ideas, because a lot of Game Boy Advance games I didn't get. I'm not even sure why. Maybe it was because there was a shorter life cycle between that and the DS, or what have you. But in fact, there wasn't even a Mario game for the Game Boy Advance, like a new Mario game, which when I thought about that, I thought that was kind of bizarre. It was just remakes for 3 years, So point is, though...
And then new Super Mario Brothers would have been newer Super Mario Brothers.
Right. And then that didn't even come out till like a year after the DS was out. So there was like a 4 or 5 year gap almost between the introduction of the Game Boy Advance and the new Mario game. So there was quite a drought. But anyway, irregardless, the 5 games that we know are coming to the Ambassador Program are Super Mario Advance 3 Yoshi's Island, Mario Kart Super Circuit, Metroid Fusion, which was just mentioned, WarioWare Inc. Mega Micro Games, and then Mario vs. Donkey Kong, which that last one especially is one that I've heard so many good things. Well, I've heard good things about them all, but the last one I was particularly interested in. So anyway, that's an awesome start and all for free, but...
Some of us.
Well, yeah, that's true. for the ambassadors.
I hope you all have fun.
We will, trust me. It's going to be freaking awesome, but... So I just keep thinking, like, what could the other 5 games be? But even beyond that, if they start selling Game Boy Advance games, which ones do you and do I want to see on the thing? Because we know that they're going to be very selective, and they're not going to have the whole catalog, and it's going to take way too long to get them on there, et cetera, because that's how Nintendo's kind of done it. But I don't know. So I just want to bring up quickly here 5 games that I think would be really awesome for the system. Whether, and I'll give you my quick reasons or whatever. Hear your thoughts about them and hear what you guys think would be great games for it, etc. Okay? Okay, first of all, Fire Emblem, which I have never played a Fire Emblem game for more than 5 minutes. And that was only one game. It was the Wii one. And I really think that I would enjoy it. And I mean, I enjoy their characters in Smash Brothers, etc. So I haven't played it. I'm dying to get into the series. I hear that the Game Boy Advance one... game was one of the best ones, or maybe there's 2 for that system. I forget.
So when you say Fire Emblem, do you mean the Fire Emblem that came out here in North America?
Well, Blazing my research said that there was actually, unless I misread something, there's 2 that came out. One was maybe a remake or something.
I think there was one.
And then there was one for the DS, I believe, which was a remake.
The DS one was Shadow Dragon, I guess.
Yeah, and that was a remake of the original. Yeah, that's right.
There was the one with, you play as Lynn, who...
Lindis,
you
don't know, at the beginning, yeah.
If you don't know the game, she's also a trophy in an assist trophy in Smash Brothers. And
that
then
game was very good.
There was, the other one was Sacred Stones.
Yeah.
And that game you play as Roy, I think, in that game?
I think so, yeah. Or maybe Roy's dad or something.
And then I think there was a 3rd one that never came out here that was also just a remake of an older game.
But yeah, the one that you're talking about, Steven, which is the one you start off as Lindis,
mm-hmm.
which is what it is, that is, I have that for Game Boy Advance, and it was very good.
Right.
Like, I enjoyed it quite a bit.
I mean, I guess we can talk about these one by one then. Do you think that is likely to, do you think that Fire Emblem is popular enough for them to actually bring that over here? I mean, I feel like they've been bringing more niche things anyway. Twin B3 Classic.
I have to wonder if Advance Wars would be more likely to hit it.
Mm-hmm.
Just as that is the more accessible game.
I know very little about that series, but I've heard it is similar. It's like that kind of strategy game.
Yeah, like I've never played more than like 3 minutes of it, but I have a feeling that could be a... Oh, we're really disappointing you, aren't we?
It's okay.
I play through all Fire Emblem. I have a
awesome.
I very much have a love-hate relationship with that game. I'll say that right
so
now.
So do I. And I can explain why too. But yeah, Advance Wars, I'm just going to jump in as someone who's actually played Advance Wars for a little bit longer.
Okay.
They do play very not differently. They play very similarly, except for the fact that in Fire Emblem you have the characters where you don't want them to die.
Right.
Which might be your issue as well. Every character that you play as in Fire Emblem has a personality, at least a bit of a personality, where at least me with my issues, I will never let them die. And that's what kind of ruins the game for me, where like if I screw up once, oh man, I gotta start the entire map again. Over and over and over again, no matter what Fire Emblem I'm playing. The thing about Advance Wars is you just have these basic units, and you're not going to worry about if you lose certain units. And that's basically the difference right there.
All right. And this isn't about Fire Emblem in particular, but I think a lot of what these games are, I don't know if this is going to work out this way, but it could, you know, be an indication of what Nintendo might be trying to push on the 3DS. Like, when are these coming out again?
The Ambassador games are coming out before the end of the year.
Yeah, before January 1st.
So, you know, is it a coincidence that Mario Kart is one of these games and that Mario vs. Donkey Kong is one of these games when Donkey Kong was also in the eShop? You know, just trying to make public awareness of certain brands that, you know, they're trying to keep relevant. And, you know, I think it might be interesting to see what the next five games are if they are any indication of what's coming. You know, they might not be, but they could be.
Well, then, moving down on my list, then, even more so, because it'd be nice to see some sequels to these series, you know, on the actual 3DS hardware. But the next one on my list, really quick, is the one I already mentioned, Golden Sun. I actually own that one, but I know that it splits fans like crazy, because some people hate that series and other people love it. I'm in the love it camp. I happen to really love Golden Sun, and the first two were pretty amazing. The third, I haven't, honestly, this is pathetic, but I haven't actually beaten it, so I'm not really sure my opinion on it, but it's pretty good from what I've played.
I played both of those games, sorry to interrupt, I didn't mean
that's okay.
It's hard to hear sometimes, these headset things here, these contraptions.
But absolutely, Golden Sun, to me, is, I mean, of all the games that I have memories of, getting my copy of Golden Sun 2 is one of those strong memories in my brain that for some reason stuck. And so I feel a great joy with those. So I really hope that people can continue to play them. All these, you know, people who their first console or their first hand, system in general, is a 3DS. So I think Golden Sun would be a really great game to be put on this the virtual console pretty quickly. Wario Land 4, I've never really been into the Wario Land games, but I know that they're very good, and so when I looked them up on lists and information about the Game Boy Advance that I might have missed, this one seemed like a pretty good one. I don't know if you guys ever played it.
I have completely 100%ed that game.
Go ahead, Jamie.
The only Wario Land game that I've played is the poorly titled Super Mario Land 3 Wario Land.
That's the one that I've played too. Although I've played Wario Land X, as you might call it. It's also known as Wario Land Shake It, because when I was looking at videos for Wario Land 4, there's a lot of similarities in the two. And I really enjoyed Wario Land Shake It for the most part. There was a few things I didn't really care for. Now, I think I've talked to you, Jamie, about this series in general. Correct me if I'm wrong, but Final Fantasy Tactics Advance? which I guess
we talked about it briefly because we were talking about Fire Emblem, because that was the strategy game that I was more familiar with. And I have not played any of the Tactics games.
Oh man, Tactics 2. My sister got that for me for Christmas years ago, and I don't know what made her do it, but I thank God all the time for it because it was such a fun experience. I've never really even been too big on the Final Fantasy franchise. I never really had experience with those kind of games before, but that's what made me want to look into Fire Emblem, but because of the kind of gameplay in Tactics Advance 2. And so I'm dying to go back and play the first one.
So right now, as we're talking, I have this bucket of Game Boy Advance games, mm-hmm. and I just took them all out and I threw them onto the floor in front of me. And I definitely have Final Fantasy Tactics Advance in front of me.
That is awesome.
And the games that I've purchased, and I tend to purchase games that are quality. You know, when a Nintendo published game comes out, odds are I will purchase that. And Final Fantasy Tactics Advance is in my left hand right now. I'm looking at it, and I did enjoy it quite a bit. Did you play through the entire thing?
Well, I've never played the original. I've played.
Oh,
the,
you played? Yeah, that's right.
The
yeah,
sequel, but I played. The
it's
hell
it's
out
pretty
of it.
Good. It's pretty good. I mean, it's really different from Fire Emblem, of course. But I'd give them both a chance, and that would be a nice thing to have. I just don't have a feeling that Nintendo's going to release that one.
Really? Well, I mean, it is Square Enix, or was that before they formed?
Yeah, have well, all their let me games look at, been first party?
It's Square Enix. It is Square Enix, yeah.
And so you said that the gameplay is a bit different than Fire Emblem? Because I was under the impression that it was kind of the same.
I mean, style. You do have grids, you know, you're moving on a grid.
Right.
But in Fire Emblem, your character, you know, the type of character you have is the type of attack it can do.
Okay.
And in Final Fantasy Tactics, your character, you know, you kind of create your character in a way, and you can use
class
potions and
stuff,
all that type of thing. Yeah, exactly. So it's more of a Final Fantasy style game, but with like a tactical thing.
Okay.
To it.
Well, the grid-based attacking and everything, that's what I really enjoyed about it in the first place. So
it is a good game, yeah, for sure. But yeah, as you talk about these, I'm now looking at my Game Boy Advance games, and I think I have a feeling about what the next few are going to be.
Well,
I have an idea myself.
Well, there's only one more. I avoided some of the obvious ones. But there's one more that I'll talk about. Then you can bring some of yours up that you want to talk
about.
Sure. You know, I was looking through, you know, my own collection and a lot of like top 25 lists on the internet and that kind of thing. And actually, Harvest Moon, Friends of Mineral Town, which mm-hmm. I think that would be a really great one, because besides Harvest Moon 64, I feel like Mineral Town was probably one of the best they've ever done. I remember playing the hell out of it back in college and everything when it first released. But, I mean, I got fooled into buying the sequels on the handhelds twice, getting the plushies, of course, which was part of the draw. But I didn't get the alpaca plush recently because I know that they're not good enough. I mean, the Friends of Mineral Town was such a great Harvest Moon game. And since they've really kind of bastardized it. I mean, the Wii titles have been not so bad. I have two of those. But yeah, Friends of Mineral Town, in my opinion, was the last good handheld Harvest Moon. And I think that would be really popular. I remember when Harvest Moon for the SNES came out on the Virtual Console. And I think 64 has been up there too. And there was a lot of reception to that, good reception. And I feel like that same kind of reception would happen if they brought it to the 3DS Virtual Console.
You look back at I'm trying to figure
have
out how
you
I
ever
want to
milked
say this.
A virtual cow?
No.
You really you haven't lived.
No. Well, I played Harvest Moon on like an emulator like years ago.
Mm-hmm.
I know. Yeah. I said the E word. I just couldn't get into it.
It isn't for everybody. I mean,
I've just found that I can't get into those kind of games really. I can understand why people like them, but not my cup of tea.
Fair enough. But okay, so, you know, but that's my five list. The Fire Emblem game, the one without the subtitle or the remake or whatever, that's the one that I heard was the best one. But
it's very good. Yeah, it's a good one.
The original Golden
it's
Sun.
It's definitely a really good introduction to the series from,
I think
from
so
what
too.
I remember.
And I really think that one will be one of them. I have a really good feeling about that.
I hope so, because again, I'm dying. There's a fire in my belly for Fire Emblem. and then we've got Golden Sun, Wario Land 4, Final Fantasy Tactics Advance, and Harvest Moon, Friends of Mineral Town. So that's my like top five pick that of non-obvious games that I think should come to the 3DS-ware. that I would probably pick up.
There are some good games that came out for the Game Boy Advance. Mm-hmm. And just looking at what the pile that I have in front of me, and I'm a big handheld whore. I have Minish Cap in front of me. I don't know if that'll be 100%, but I think that would be a wonderful addition. That's a really good game.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, yes?
I was going to say, do you think that they might opt to put A Link to the Past
on there instead? I was about to get to that.
Is that the game they're more inclined to give away for free, and then Minish Cap is maybe the game that they're hoping to sell to people, or would it be the other way around?
If they actually sell, because there's no guarantee that they're going to even sell games.
They gotta.
I bet they will eventually. Yeah. But I'm going to say that I think A Link to the Past will be the one that they end up selling again. And they sold A Link to the Past a couple times, but that's the one that people, you know, when they think about Zelda, aside from Ocarina of Time, of course, they go, oh, A Link to the Past is the best one after that. I think Minish Cap would be more of a giveaway choice, which is too bad because it's a very good game.
Miyamoto has gone on record and stated that he wants to remake Link to the Past. And like he's actually talked about maybe, I forget, and I can't cite sources. Yeah, like 3D-ifying it, that he's interested in that sort of thing. So I could imagine them giving away Minish Cap as is and then selling another Link to the Past with that 3D effect.
Unfortunately, the Nintendo guy that I am, I would end up buying that again.
Oh, I would too.
If it was done really well, I would imagine it would be done well. That would be really cool. As long as, you know, they paid, you know, reverence to the original and they didn't make it too wacky or anything. Or,
well, I have a feeling that maybe he just released it as one of those just 3D-ified kind of things, like, you know,
like Kirby's Adventure, or
like Kirby's Adventure, which was
Well, in that case, then I really don't care because I wouldn't be able to see it. So that, I mean, that and Golden Sun is really the only game I'm really qualified to talk about on your list. I really liked Golden Sun when it came out. I think it might have just hit me at the right time, but I played that, like, I remember, like, a Saturday where it was just, like, it was so easy to play because it was just take it around with you, and I think that was the first time I really had, like, a 16-bit style RPG on the go like that, and, like, that was really cool to have. Like, you can look back and say that this story wasn't really that interesting, and it's kind of just the same, you know, elemental setup, kind of visiting temples and stuff, but I had fun with it, and then I had a lot of fun with the second game as well, even though I thought it was a little hard to figure out where I was going at times.
But it'd be kind of cool that if they were going to release it, to release both in one download. Like, because, it is one game, essentially.
That would be cool. Basically. I never played the second one. I played the first one, you know, they get, spoiler alert, they get on the boat and it's over. I remember beating that game, though. I was sitting at the hospital, the emergency room, with a friend of mine, and I remember specifically beating that game. So that game definitely has, you know, a
lasting power.
Yeah, it has a lasting power on me, for sure. So I would love it if they released the two of them, for sure, because I would play the second one, definitely.
I mean, and all these, you know, new 3DS owners or DS owners can play the third one in the series, but they can't any longer play the original two, so I think that there'd be some interest there, you know, for people who picked up the third one to go back and play the original story. And maybe be incentive to make another one, which I would be down for.
I've always really wanted to check out WarioWare Twisted myself. It came out, it was like the last GBA game that came out, pretty much. I don't think anyone really paid it a whole lot of attention, but from what I hear, it's supposed to be awesome, and when you have the gyroscope in the 3DS already, then kind of sounds like a no-brainer that they could do something like that.
I agree.
Mm-hmm.
That's a really good WarioWare game, and it's, as I mentioned on the podcast before, I have a Game Boy Advance, and the only thing that's in that Game Boy Advance, basically, is WarioWare Twisted. It's my WarioWare Twisted machine. Yeah. So it's sticking out there, and I agree, that would be a really good idea, but I don't know if they'd do it, because they'd have to do a little bit more programming just to get it to work without that pack, even though the ability is in the system itself. I don't know. Every once in a while, Nintendo strikes me as being, not to be negative, but lazy when it comes to some things, if you know what I mean.
Negative world. Love negative world.
Can't do you know what I'm saying,
negative galaxy. Sorry.
Nintendo should just be a developer. No more hardware. Is that what we're talking about, right?
No. Oh, yeah. No, not at all.
Sorry.
But, yeah, no, I agree. That'd be a really good one. In my pile, I just separated a bunch of stuff that I think will never come with some stuff that might come.
Okay.
And we have Mario & Luigi Superstar Saga.
Hey. Mm-hmm.
Is this your not or will?
This is one that might come because it's a Nintendo Nintendo published game, and it's really good. Like it's possibly the best of the Mario and Luigi games. Bowser's Inside Story is really good. I kind of have them up against each other. We have Metroid. We have Fusion already coming, right?
Yes.
So we have Metroid Other M, right? We have Metroid Zero Mission.
Mm-hmm.
Pokemon Pinball, why not?
Oh my gosh, that's on my list. I forgot about
really
that game.
Really good one, yeah, really good one.
I love that
And I'm
game.
Just gonna go through. I'm just gonna go through my little pile here, if that's okay.
Oh yeah, go for it.
Why not? And which Kirby game was? It was Amazing Mirror, right? That was offered.
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah, it's unfortunate because Kirby Nightmare and Dreamland is actually a better game. I have Mario Golf Advanced Tour.
You know,
okay, Mario Golf like Advanced. Like
I love Mario Golf, but I never played the GBA version, but I heard it was actually really interesting.
They're very cool. The handheld games are like, they sort of have an RPG element to them,
yeah.
Where you actually create a character who is you. You're not playing as one of the Mario characters. You're playing as yourself, but you meet up with the Mario characters and you level up and stuff. Very cool. That'd be great. Wario Land 4, which I agree with. That should be one that shows up. Mario versus Donkey Kong is. Fire Emblem's here. Advance Wars. That one wasn't actually. We're not getting that one, are we? Our Advance Wars?
No, that's not
one of the five.
I think we should. Super Circuit, we're getting. Pokemon Sapphire.
The Pokemon games are interesting in general because they've never. I mean, well, I know that the Game Boy itself hasn't been on the shop for a while, but will they release those in their raw forms or not?
I really don't think they will.
Yeah, I don't see that ever happening.
Neither do I.
They want to milk that.
Well, they have their new Pokemon games, and
right.
You know they like to be able to remake stuff when they can, and I think the huge appeal of those games is lost when you can't communicate with other people outside of the game, because it's not like you're going to be able to do any of the trading or multiplayer aspects of it if you play
exactly.
On the...
Touché.
The two really third-party-ish kind of games... Or sorry, three are Castlevania, Harmony of Dissonance, Castlevania, Circle of the Moon, and Mega Man and Bass. But I really don't think that those ones are going to be them. I just wanted to throw them out that those are great games.
I've heard a lot of things about them. Good things, of course, of all three.
Yeah.
And I've never been into the Castlevania series, but you know what? If they released them in like a downloadable, cheaper form like that of one of those really great games, I would be down for giving that a try and getting into it. Like, I think there's potential to bring me and other people into these franchises that have existed through these pretty quality games that, you know, I mean, again, with the GBA, I guess that could be Guillaume's...
The GBA?
Yeah. All right.
GBA. No, but I guess with it having such a short lifespan, despite the DS having the port, you know, I didn't really get a chance to play some of those games. And those would be really, really interesting ones for me to go back to so many years later. So thanks, everyone, for listening. You know, we're definitely out of time here. We want you to comment on what you've heard on negativeworld.org. Simply find the thread associated with this episode and, you know, do your thing, do your posting. If you don't want to subscribe to Negative World, you know, you can reach us through our Facebook page, which is simply, you just got to search for negativeworld.org. Or you can reach us on Twitter at @negative_world. All right, be sure to check out the discussion thread for Skyward Sword, which has grown exponentially since the release of the game, and there's some pretty interesting and varied opinions in there. Also, you can go tell Guillaume what makes you feel good about yourself in his thread. He's dying to know. And the Mario Kart 7 reviews are starting to speed their way in, and we've got a thread all about that as well. Look for my review of it coming soon, perhaps by the next podcast recording. I'll be playing this game pretty heavily starting Sunday. Finally, I want to remind everyone to update their game database. It's a really fun feature of the site, and no, Zero isn't putting me out to it. I actually just believe that. So All right. Thanks. You know, thanks, Paul.
You sound really convincing.
I'm just tired, actually.
I'm just kidding.
No, I'm just tired, man. All right. Thanks, Paul and Jamie, for doing this with me and spending the evening here talking about video games. Appreciate your time both here on the boards.
Oh, thank you.
Yep. Oh, thank
for having us.
And everyone else, thanks for listening, and we'll see you in 2 weeks.
And then the music goes. Music.
Just cut the what do you
we
think?
Did talk a lot about Beetle and his stupid Beetle and
Beetle and his bicycle and his Beetle and we should take our golden Beetle out and fly it into his face. Yeah, I don't know.
The thing is though, no other podcast is going to talk about Beetle as much as us, and he deserves his, you know, day in the sun. Go.
Thank you. Thank you. Oh,
you know what, I did that. I was video chatting with my friend as we were playing Zelda, which maybe is nerdy, maybe it's not, but I heard that in her game, and I totally blurted that out and freaked her out. It was so funny.
That's awesome. You know what? To tell you the truth,
guy from Resident Evil 4 need to go make a game together where they're just like,
what are you selling?
What are you selling? Thank you.
That's right. The two of them together are like selling stuff. That would be great.
The merchants of every game get together.
And the creepy merchant who follows you around in the bazaar, he can just be there following you around.
That brings me to something. I think it really is time for Zelda. I don't know if we're recording or not, but whatever.
Yeah.
I think it's time for Zelda to actually get some voice acting in there. Because when we go to Beetle's Island, his talk is clearly like this refined British man.
Uh-huh.
Right? And his talk during the day isn't. And he even mentions it. He goes, oh, the way I'm talking right now. Well, that is how I am, blah, 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 blah.
Sure.
And it's something that would really come across if we actually had a voice actor there.
No, at the very least, they really need to let you skip dialogue quicker.
Well, that was an omission from this game only, though, which I thought was peculiar. But I think that this game actually put me into the camp of, not that I'm super for it, and I don't think that any game should be made without voice acting from now on, but I can see where it's warranted more now, because I thought the story was great, and I think I would have loved to have heard these people talking these lines, except for Link. I'm cool with keeping him silent, because that's just kind of something I understand, especially when people are like, what's wrong, Link? And then just like Lassie, they're like, oh, Zelda's in a well? Like, there's nothing in the emotions.
What's
to,
wrong, Link?
You just assume that he's told them, you know?
Yeah, it was like Mario RPG, where you see Mario like acting out whatever happened in the story, and that's funny he's like standing in midair and then falling and stuff like that. So that's funny with Mario. It's all silly, but
I would have loved to have heard Zelda's father, you know, like pretty upset.
If you noticed, everyone in Skyloft kind of had a bird name to them. Right, we had Fledge, which is like a fledgling. We had Professor Owlin.
Oh yeah.
We had Zelda's dad, Gepora, who's clearly a reference to an owl. Right?
However, I do have something to say about that really quick. But yeah, there's Groose, which sounds like goose.
Yeah, that's
although,
right.
I kept thinking of Moose from the Archie comics.
What about Patrice? There was Patrice and Piper.
Partridge.
I like the characters a lot in this game.
No, that's what I like. All the Skyloft people, and you know what? I have a feeling that every single one of them probably has a name that's somewhat in some way connected to a bird in some way.
Right.
And the only one that is the most kind of obscure is Gepora. And the only reason we know that is because of Ocarina of Time, right?
Like they had Colin and Stritch. I'm sure they might be names of birds that I don't
know. You know, a bird says, no, Colin, Ka, Ka.
Oh. Right? Want that.
Yeah, you'll find it references in there.
There was Zelda, the Zelda bird.
Well, okay. Well, no, but I'll give you that one. But look at
the circus guy Dodo. You know, yet another character like that. His name was Dodo.
Huh.
That's right.
However, the thing with I just read in Nintendo Power that Gay Bora's design went through a lot of different phases, and actually he wasn't intentionally made to look like the owl, or so they say. But it just turns out that that's the one they like the best. And I don't know what came first, the name or the look. But I think that later on, I think it's got to be a direct reference to the fact that he is this watcher over. That makes sense. I mean, he probably dies and becomes reincarnated as the owl for eternity or something. But I don't know how intentional that was because of that article in Nintendo Power. But
well, I like that. I think that's cool.